Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
We'll do quite a bit of sports talk today and get into the NFL, and Rich Cimini will join us at 11 o'clock. But Rick, I feel like we have to start with today is April Fool's Day, and I feel like that wins. I feel like every day has become April Fool's Day for the life that we are currently leading right now.
Yeah, I mean, it still seems surreal. And I mean, the only thing I think getting a lot of people through this is trying to come to, you know, some semblance of a daily routine, a daily schedule to try to keep you on track and get you through this. Because, I mean, otherwise, I mean, with no sports on TV and everything else, I know me personally, you're battling through it. And I mean, it's hard on everybody, but, you know, you got to find a way to make it through, make it work. And if that's doing 4 or 5 art projects a day or whatever you have to do, playing some Uno, that's what you're doing. That's what we're doing.
Dave, after my 90-day trial of 2020, I'm ready to cancel my subscription. That's all I can say right now. I mean, the calendar just turned over to April. That puts us another month closer to 2020 being over, man, because it's been a rough year so far.
Oh, this is a, I mean, rough year is like an understatement, right? I can't believe. And remember when 2019 ended? We were like, all right, let's bring in 2020. Nobody thought we could possibly have this, and we're only a quarter of the way through. So you're right. Let's cancel. Let's refund our money and let's move on, Chris, because my goodness. And by the way, for everyone, I can't imagine there's a lot of idiots out there. We're not celebrating April Fools today. We're not joking around. We're not giving false information. We're not playing that game, Chris. We are here for levity. We are here for some serious conversation, and we are here for some sports talk as well.
We like to have fun, Dave, but we don't want to be a part of anybody spreading any misinformation about what's going on right there, right now, because it's such an uncertain time, and there's already enough anxiety, so we don't want anybody to call in and give us any crazy phone calls. We just want to have fun, talk about sports, talk about life, and try to add some relief and give some sense of normalcy to the people out there that listen to us every single day.
Now, I did get a great tweet last night. It was from someone that ordered delivery to the house. And he said, it never occurred to me, but listening to you guys yesterday, I upped my tip by a tremendous amount, and the guy was so appreciative and so thankful. So at least we're spreading some kind of normalcy around to the land. But the big moment yesterday on the show was Rick had a toilet malfunction, and he became a certified master plumber by the end of the show. He said it was fixed. Let's go back there quickly. Where are we with the upstairs bathroom toilet?
The toilet is completely fixed, Dave.
Completely fixed.
And I actually tested it. I did exactly what I would normally do in the morning. And that thing, I mean, I had to get off it. Almost, I mean, don't suck me in. There's that much. I mean, there's that much power with this thing.
Look at Santiago.
He's on his game. I mean, he's well rested.
He really is.
Too well rested.
don't you miss burning the midnight candle, right? And just staying up to do the Knicks till 12:30, wake up at 4:30 in the morning.
I have nothing to do, Dave. This is really boring.
I think a lot of us feel the same way. And the NFL, you know, Rick, I know you and I have differing opinions on this. They just go on like they're blind to anything going on in the real world. We're gonna have the draft. I guess people are getting upset by the draft being at the end of April, which doesn't bother me as much, but. You know, they're gonna just start the season in September, and away we're gonna go. I don't know. It feels like their head is in the clouds a little bit to me.
Well, I mean, I think they're in a unique situation. I mean, this isn't the NBA or the NHL and in Major League Baseball where, I mean, you're forced to play games. I mean, the things that they can do that are on their calendar. I mean, I think you had the same conversation leading into free agency, and it was a welcome distraction. And you know, we had a couple weeks talking about that. But I think it would all depend on the situation. I mean, if all of a sudden in the next couple of weeks we're finally reached the peak of this thing, or hopefully reached the peak of this thing, and you're starting to see, I mean, the death toll continue to go up, you know, then maybe they pivot, and maybe it's a bad look for them. But right now, I mean, Greeny keeps saying it, SVP keeps saying it, and I'm 100% all in with it. I mean, it doesn't cost you anything to be optimistic. So, I mean, do we need it? Yeah, I think we kind of need it, especially here in the sports world. It would be nice to turn your mind off for a couple of days and just watch the NFL draft. But, I mean, at this point, Dave, who knows what the hell is going to happen, where we're going to be in September. But, I mean, listen, I got to be honest. Fingers crossed. is that we do have NFL football when it's supposed to start.
Well, here's the thing. I think what the league is doing is good for the psyche of the country because, like you said, Rick, at least for a little bit throughout the course of our day, we can fix our minds on sports. And everybody in America is pretty much passionate about the NFL. So you have an opportunity to talk about something other than coronavirus. But also, from Roger Goodell's standpoint, from a planning and logistical aspect, we don't know what's going to happen next month or 2 months from now or 3 months from now. So I think them going about business as usual is the prudent thing to do because we got 5 months until the regular season kicks off. So we don't know what's going to happen. And with all of that uncertainty, it doesn't make sense to start ripping up the plans for the 2020 offseason, not knowing where the country is going to be as far as containing the spread of this virus. So I think it's the smart thing to do for the NFL to continue business as usual. I understand there are some logistical hurdles with organization for drafts and for free agency and getting contracts signed and all of that stuff. But teams will figure out a way, and it's a level playing field because everybody is dealing with the same constraints. But I do think that the NFL is doing the right thing by trying to hold out hope that you're going to be able to kick the regular season off on time and that you will have the ability to have fans in stadiums.
Well, we got to figure that mini camp is not going to happen, right? I mean, that's right around the corner, and I can't imagine
OTAs and everything else.
No, OTAs and mini camp aren't going to happen. But, Dave, you don't need that to have a football season, right? In 2011, the lockout year, we didn't have OTAs and mini camps. We didn't have an off-season strength and conditioning program, but we still started the season on time. Now, training camps weren't at the remote locations that a lot of teams usually use. They were at the team's facilities, but you're not going to find any NFL players complaining about that because most NFL players prefer the team's facilities to a college or university nearby anyway. So I just think with everything that's going on, we're making a big deal out of it because it's out of the norm, but I don't think it's really going to affect the business of football, especially when it pertains to what we're going to see this fall.
Do you think they look at it and have like a drop dead date of, all right, guys, if we're not back and somewhat functional by this date, there's going to have to be something that we do?
Yeah, I would imagine that they're going. I mean, what they're selling right now is hope, and you know, me personally, I appreciate it. I mean, you need something to look forward to, and it's something to grasp at. I mean, it's a light at the end of the tunnel that you know we will get through this, and once we get through it, you have the NFL to look forward to. But, I mean, I would imagine they're sitting right now having conversations about contingency plans. You know, if this thing is, you know, if we push the season back a week, you know, is this an opportunity, you know, to have the Super Bowl on President's Day weekend? Like, I mean, are we going to play in front of in empty stadiums? All those things have to be going. All those conversations have to be going on right now.
800-919-3776. And of course, the phone calls are welcome as they are every single day. So another thing, we get the new playoff format this year, right, Chris? We're up to 14 teams, 7 in each, only one bye. That's going to start this year as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to start this year. The owners voted on it yesterday and they got a 3/4 majority. So at least 24 out of the 32 owners voted to approve it. And I think it's what's in the best interest of the league. And who's going to complain about a couple of extra playoff games? I don't think anybody would. Now, it puts the second seed in each conference at a disadvantage because they no longer get the bye. The 2 seed will have to match up with the 7 seed. But I think that makes for better theater, better drama as we build toward the end of the regular season because you're going to have more meaningful games down the stretch. So I'm excited to see it, Dave. I mean, this past year we would have had the Rams, a team that played in the Super Bowl in the 2018 season, and we would have had the Pittsburgh Steelers, one of the most iconic franchises in the NFL. Both of those teams would have made the playoff field in their respective conferences. I thought that would have been interesting, man. I thought it would have been compelling drama, great matchups, and people would have been here for it.
Well, the Steelers, I don't think, would have been great. The Rams, I think, would have been really good. The Rams were a good football team. But the Steelers, with the quarterback situation, I don't think would have been great. But overall,
I think there are a lot of Pittsburgh Steelers fans, and so you have the opportunity to engage another market and have them match up against the Kansas City Chiefs out in Arrowhead. I think that fans, people would have been excited about it.
Maybe.
Might not have been a great game, but people would have been excited.
Yeah, I think the Steelers and the Chiefs in the postseason is exciting, and I think the game would have been a disaster, and Kansas City would have won by 20 points. But I think for the most part, because I've heard a lot of, well, you know, you're going to start to get these lesser teams in the postseason and it's going to be watered down. I don't think like that. I don't feel like that. I think you're still going to get a very good product in the postseason. And I think typically the 7th best team in a conference is a team that's pretty much worthy of going to the postseason.
Well, I think they said, I think the stat is since 1990, when the last time that the playoff format was changed, I think there would only have been one team that was under 500 that would have qualified for the playoffs under the new format.
Right. So the teams that mainly are going to be these sub 500 teams are the teams that win awful divisions, but that would be that way anyhow.
Yeah. I mean, that's the fundamental flaw of the playoff system is that if you play in a bad division, you could be, 7-9 or 8-8 and make the playoffs and host the playoff game as opposed to, an 11-5 Patriots team with Matt Castle as the quarterback that doesn't end up making the playoffs.
Right. So that team now gets into the postseason and the 7-9 Seahawks team still gets in because that's the way that the NFL is set up, Chris, is that if you win your division, you have a home game and you are immediately into the postseason.
Yeah, and I get it. I have to reward the division winners, but I mean, it sucks when you have double-digit win teams on the outside looking in the playoffs. I think this new rule, this new format mitigates that to some degree. I mean, I went back and looked. The 10-6 2010 Giants would have gotten into the postseason that year, and that was the year I believe that the Green Bay Packers, who were a wild card team, ended up winning the entire thing. But there was a 7-9 Seattle Seahawks team that won their division and hosted a home playoff game against the New Orleans Saints. So, I mean, this is a situation where I think if you're a good team, if you're a competitive team, if you're a double-digit win team, you're going to be in the playoffs. You don't have to worry about that anymore. And for me, I think that there should be some kind of reward for teams that have that kind of success in the regular season.
Yeah, you shouldn't really go 11-5, certainly, but you shouldn't really go 10-6 and not get in. That's a hell of a season. Like, if you go 10-6 in the NFL, Rick, you deserve to gain entree into the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I mean, if you look back, I'll give you some numbers. If you look back, since the start of 2002, that's 36 additional playoff teams. 9 would be 8-8. None obviously with losing records.
Right.
Would have been the number 7 seeds. And over that same period, you'd have 8 of the 9 10-6 teams that missed the postseason would have made it under the new format. So that's rewarding who you want to reward of the team with the double digit wins, that don't win the division that end up missing out on the wild card. I think it keeps more people interested. You know what I mean? It keeps more markets interested.
Of course it does.
And it's an extra, and all of a sudden now, I mean, it sets up perfectly for my new holiday, You're Welcome, where you have, 3 games on Saturday and 3 games on Sunday. I mean, that's unbelievable.
But Rick, what it also sets up perfectly for is for the NFL to start negotiating these television contracts, and I'm not sure you guys seen it or not, but they've already decided who is going to carry those additional playoff games. It's going to be NBC and CBS. So, I mean, in this time where we have so much economic uncertainty, we were talking about why the players should push to get the CBA signed and agreed upon. It's because the NFL had a plan in how they were going to approach the contract negotiations for the new TV deals. And for that to already be publicized, just let you know that there's a framework that they have in mind about what these contracts are going to look like. And it's a windfall for everybody involved.
Of course it is. Of course it is. It's going to be billions and billions of dollars. Now, did I see this? And the phone lines, of course, are open. 800-919-3776. We jump off with the NFL, but we'll go God knows where during the course of the show today. Did I see it? And if I'm wrong, I'll look ridiculous, and that's fine. Did I see that Nickelodeon will simulcast?
Nickelodeon. Yeah. And this aggravates me. This kind of pisses me off.
Are they going to dump slime on the, like, how will this work exactly?
No, I think it's going to be more geared towards the younger audience, and we'll end up seeing who's going to call the game and who's going to be the sideline reporters and everything else. I think they'll probably have a different halftime show, I'd imagine, because of all the, some of the negative publicity that went into, this year's halftime performance. This aggravates me too, because I pitched this probably 18 months ago, maybe 2 years ago, that there should be, I'm sitting here with my son, right? And I'm trying to figure out, like, what can we watch? He likes watching sports, but I mean, his attention span, he's like a gnat. I mean, he's 5 years old, so he's but all of a sudden you throw a Paw Patrol or something on and he's dialed in, like he is locked in. So I pitched, we're owned by Disney. Why don't we do for kids a sports center, a Disney sports center, like a kids sports center that you can have, hosted by Mickey Mouse. You know what I mean? Something like that with more animation involved. I mean,
right.
The kids would love that.
Okay. And how far up the ladder did you bring this?
Right up the ladder.
All the way up the ladder?
Is high? No, not all the way.
Don't throw anybody under the bus.
No, as high as I could get. I thought it was, I mean, I think that's a great idea for the kids. Get the kids involved in this.
So a kid-centric sports center.
Yeah, you know how like, So I watch this Lego show now, right? This new
yeah,
Lego
Ben
Masters
loves that show. Yeah, he loves
yeah,
that.
He loves it, right? But the cool part about that show is they'll make their builds. They build their builds, and then all of a sudden, like, it comes alive. Have you seen the show?
I don't know how.
Okay, but with technology or whatever it is, I guess they must use the same concept they use in the Lego movies. So they're like, it comes, like, the story gets told and it comes alive. Like, the Legos come alive, which is unbelievable. So the other part of my idea was that we should have each player, because the guys would love this, NHL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NFL, you help create your own animated character. So now you can show the highlights in animation. So everyone's like a cartoon in the highlights. So the kids are watching real highlights, and you could watch the real highlights, but it's cartoon version.
Yeah, they should cater to kids. They have the Snapchat Sports Center that my kids.
But
like
you're
to
actually,
watch
but you're actually catering to the parents too, because now the kids, like, you want to watch something that, like, you want to watch your sports highlights. The kids don't want to watch it with you, but all of a sudden now they want to watch the animated version. So you're still mm-hmm. getting the same highlights, but just the animation.
So really, it feels like your idea was somewhat ripped off here.
It sounds like it a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what, Dave? I think it's something that the NFL views as trying to be forward-thinking and making sure that they attract a younger viewer, a younger audience, just because you recognize that kids aren't playing football as much as they used to 10, 15 years ago. So it makes sense to try to engage that younger fan base in some way, shape, or form. And I think this represents an opportunity. And from the broadcast partner side, I think CBS was looking for a way to be able to pitch the NFL on why it should maintain its standing with the amount of NFL properties that they have broadcast rights to. I mean, you talked about them paying Tony Romo $17 million a year to be the color on the play-by-play broadcast. I think them offering up Nickelodeon as a chance to broadcast some of the playoff games and maybe some regular season properties as well makes all the sense in the world. I think that's why that situation came to be. I think that's how it manifested itself and why Viacom CBS decided to try to use Nickelodeon as one of the vehicles the NFL can engage younger audiences.
So what are we going to have? Our first NFL weekend of the postseason will be 3 games on Saturday and 3 games on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how good is that going to be?
No, it's going to be amazing. Start at 1, take you all the way through. I mean, I think the last game kicks off at, what, 8 o'clock?
So even on the Sunday, we're going to get the late, like, 8:30 kickoff?
It's what you would have on every NFL Sunday, right?
Right. So it's going to be like your normal NFL Sunday. So you'll get the 1, you'll get the 4:30, you'll get probably the 8:15, and then you'll... Wow, that's going to be
But
so
Dave,
wild
you get
weekend.
That on back-to-back days, on back-to-back weekends. Think about that. You get that Saturday, you get that Sunday, and then the following Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, this sounds delicious, doesn't it?
Oh, it sounds unbelievable. I mean, it does. I mean, the one negative thing, I guess if there is a negative thing as far as teams look at this, I mean, it does put the number one seeds at a huge advantage. Huge advantage.
Yeah, but isn't that kind of nice? Like, you
That's
are the
way it should be.
Seed. Yeah, you get a huge advantage now. You've had the best. There's only one team in the entire NFL that can say they've had an equal season to you, and that's the other conference, the number one seed. I kind of like that.
No, you kind of like it, and I'm sure the number one seed would kind of like it too. But if all of a sudden now you start running through, I mean, we're five Super Bowls in, and it's both number one seeds playing in the five Super Bowls. That could be a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They have a huge advantage, so you got to figure, right, that those because those teams are going to have home field and they're going to have to win 2 games to get to the Super Bowl. I mean, I love those chances.
I love it too, Dave, and I don't think we have to worry about the one seed making it to 5 straight Super Bowls. I know it's a tremendous advantage. You know, you get to start off in a divisional round rather than starting off being 1 of 14 with the chance to advance to the Super Bowl, but I just for me, it's all about being able to reward the team that had the best regular season, and there's going to be a lot of competition to try to get that number one spot because of how valuable it is just from an odd standpoint. So I'm excited about it. I think it's going to make for incredible TV. It's going to be, you know, a lot of drama, a lot of buildup once we get to the month of December and people jockeying for playoff position.
So what is it? It's 4 division winners and now 3 wild card teams. So 2 plays 7, 3 plays 6, 4 plays 5. The 1 seeds get the bye. And then when we get to week 2, it'll just be business as usual. There'll be four teams left, and then we'll have that. Then the next week we'll have the championship games, and then we have the Super Bowl. So the only change, and it is a monumental change, but the only real change is the extra team and the extra playoff game on Saturday, Sunday of the first weekend, and then it goes back to what we've seen forever now.
Yeah, but it's been 30 years. I mean, you're talking about you have more teams, too, in the NFL. So,
sure.
I mean, I get, you know, people... you know, like it a certain way, and I mean, you hear all sorts of different opinions, but I
understand people that, and I'm one of these people. Although I like this, like they're just hesitant for change. People,
yeah, but
do
look at the numbers,
like
though.
Change.
Yeah, but the numbers back up that there's not going to be. I mean, you're not talking about a bunch of, you know, 8-8, 7-9 teams now making the playoffs. They're still going to be good teams. The problem with the playoff system, if there is any problem, because we all love the NFL and we love NFL playoffs, is the Fugazi, you know. 8-8, 7-19 that wins the division that hosts a playoff game.
Yeah. Because that stinks.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's a distinct advantage of having a home. Like, I mean, Chris can speak on this better than me. I actually like playing on the road, but, I mean, I would imagine there's a distinct advantage of playing at home in the playoffs in the NFL.
Yeah, there's a huge advantage. Huge advantage. But that being said, when we won the Super Bowl, we had the wild card game in our building, and then we went on the road for the divisional game against a 15-1 Packers team, and then on the road for the championship game in San Francisco and into the Super Bowl. So, I mean, listen, the 2007 Giants were on the road for their entire run. Yep. It doesn't happen that often, but it does happen. So, again, I think when you start talking about the tournament, if you get in, anybody's got a chance to get hot at the right time and win the entire thing. I mean, the one seed has a huge advantage because that's one less game you have to play, but you still got to go out there and you got to try to win. In 2007, I was a one seed in the NFC with the Dallas Cowboys. We were 13-3. And the Giants came in our building and beat our ass. So, I mean, it can happen.
How about that, huh? I mean, I have so little. I mean, let me just have that. By the way, Chris, I don't know if you saw it last night. I think from 9 to 11:30 on the NFL Network was your Super Bowl was on. Did you catch it at all?
I didn't catch it, Dave. Yeah. I was actually in the bed. I was wrapping up watching Tiger King. I finished through episode 4 now. But then after that, man, I was beat, so I just took it down.
Yeah, so I was doing the tour of the channels, right, as we tend to do, and I hit the NFL Network. I was like, oh, I wonder what the NFL Network has on. And it was the Patriots were starting their last real drive, not the last one where they didn't score, the last real drive, the one where Welker dropped the ball or was overthrown or whatever you want to say, and they went down the field, punted it away. And then 88 yards later, the first play of the drive, of course, the throw to Manningham and a couple more throws to Manningham, had a big throw to Akeem Nicks. And then, you know, it doesn't get discussed a lot because it didn't matter, but Bradshaw should never have scored on that run. What was the thought on the sideline when he went into the end zone?
No, he was trying to stop, but his momentum carried him in the end zone. Like, he was trying to stop, and he was shaking his head. But, I mean, listen, it's just one of those things that happened. And for us on the defensive line, we wouldn't want to have it any other way. Like, if the game was going to be on the line, we wanted to be on the field. And you saw on that last Patriots drive, before they threw that Hail Mary, our pass rush was hitting Tom Brady quite a bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Justin Tuck was unbelievable.
Tuck was unbelievable. Linville Joseph had a hell of a game. Like, everybody on our D-line came to play. Felt like everybody impacted the game on some level. But, Dave, going back to that second-to-last Patriots drive, when they missed that throw to Wes Welker, mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever seen the soundtracks version of that Super Bowl, but the referee right there on the spot said, that was the game. Like, he literally said out loud to one of the other officials, that was the game. That was a huge play.
Yeah, I mean, and he was wide open. And then I guess it was Collinsworth. Yeah, and I love Collinsworth, but he said the most ridiculous thing. Do you know what he said, Chris? He goes, that's a play that Wes Welker catches 100 times out of 100. I was like, what? He just did not catch it. So
he didn't catch it.
Yeah. And then Michaels, because it was such a bizarre thing to say, he didn't catch it. So it's not 100 out of 100. And Al Michaels, to his credit, goes, well, I guess that was the 101st time then, because he wasn't able to. I mean, I was like, what are you talking about? It was.
But Collinsworth also said on that Manningham catch, if the Giants win the Super Bowl, that will be one of the greatest catches in Super Bowl history.
And look at it. I mean, that is now almost a decade ago. And when we think about the great plays of the storied career of Eli Manning, I mean, that's right up there, right? That the two plays that you think of are that play and the Tyree play.
That's why the conversation about whether or not Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer is ridiculous, man. You're talking about the biggest stage the NFL has to offer, and Eli has two of the what? top 10, top 15 most iconic moments in Super Bowl history?
Absolutely.
I think that throw, I mean, that throw to Tyree may be one of, I mean, that may be a top two or three.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, under the circumstances. I mean, he should have, I mean, the whistle should have blown. I mean, he was in the grasp of three.
The rules
three
were different back then, though, Rick. The rules didn't change until 2009, yeah.
No, I know, but listening to, I think the referee in that, right behind Eli Manning was Mike Carey, who said he probably, I mean, if he had a better angle, he probably should have blown it down, but he didn't. But I mean, you're playing what would have been. I mean, if the Patriots win that Super Bowl, that's the greatest team of all time.
Of all time.
It's not even a question.
No, we can never discuss it again.
No, I mean, it's
and Mercury
it's
Morris
and 0.
Is disgusted.
Yeah.
He would be disgusted. But I mean, if you look at that Patriots run to 18-0 in how they were winning games, for the Giants to beat them in the Super Bowl, that may be the great. I don't care what anyone, you can argue with me if you want. Under those circumstances, in that situation, making that catch, which still makes no sense to anyone watching it over and over again.
And you've heard the stories, right? Where during the week, he couldn't, in practice, he couldn't catch anything.
No, he couldn't catch anything. I mean, the fact that he caught it on his helmet with Rodney Harrison ripping at his arm, I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's one of the great catches of all time. And then the one from Manningham was, I mean, the throw is insane. And the catch is amazing, too. And to get both feet down, I mean, these are two of the most, I don't think this is me, Giants fan, Rothenberg speaking, these are two of the most iconic plays in the history of the NFL, aren't they, Chris?
They have to be, Dave. They have to be, man. And that's why we love it, man. We want to see guys be at their best when their best is required, and Eli Manning was always that. And then you talk about two guys that are kind of nondescript players in Mario Manningham and David Tyree, and guess what? They had huge moments, and that cemented their legacy with the Giants franchise. So, I mean, I just, you know, to me, the playoffs is where you make your legacy as a player, and getting back to how we started this conversation, the NFL expanding the playoff field, I'm excited to see what comes out of it, the kind of drama that we're going to see, especially in the earlier rounds.
Bigger play, Manningham or Santonio Holmes?
I'm going to say Manningham, and I'll tell you why. I think the Steelers probably win that game anyhow. I don't know if the Giants win that game if Manningham doesn't make that catch and Eli doesn't make that throw. I could be wrong. I don't think there's a huge difference between the two. But remember, the Steelers were down where? That was like the 12-yard line.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Was that first down? It might have been first down. The Steelers were in position to get in and score regardless. I don't know that the Giants would have gone down and
you
scored
say
regardless.
That, say that to the Atlanta Falcons when they were first in goal inside the 10-yard line and couldn't score.
But I would probably lean toward Manningham too, Dave. Well, first of all, because I was on the team and got a ring out of it. But secondly, when you look at the opponent, I mean, the Steelers were playing the Cardinals, right?
Yeah.
I mean, going up against the Patriots and Tom Brady, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time, I think that puts another layer on it.
What would
unbelievable
you
say? Unbelievable playing that game too. No, the Santonio, I mean, between the throw and the catch, it was, I mean, ridiculous. They actually, I mean, circumstances different, but I mean, where the throw was, I mean, as far as how close to the sideline, I mean, Holmes was in the end zone. But, I mean, to keep both feet in for both receivers was crazy.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
But the play at the end of the first half that James Harrison made, he returned. I mean, I still, like, I can see it in my head.
I can't believe they didn't tackle him.
I know. And then he rolls into the end zone.
At any point, the half is over. Like, that's not your first goal at the six. That's the half is over, and you go in still in decent shape if you're Arizona. Oh, that was when you look back at the most defining plays in Super Bowl history, that has to be one of them.
That just solidified for me that watching James Harrison at his size run that fast, how big he is, he's by far one of the scariest guys in the NFL.
And nobody wanted to tackle him, Rick.
Nobody.
Nobody wanted to tackle him.
But you know, when you go back and you look, like, there's a missed tackle. He had a chance. That guy had a chance. There's another missed tackle. They must have had, what, 8 to 10 chances to stop him during the course of that run.
I think it was actually a wide receiver that tried to tackle him twice and missed both times.
Yeah, but then look, remember, go back to that play in your head. Remember when he's like, it looks like he's actually going to go down at, like, the 2-yard line. And he kind of, like, rolls on a defender into the end zone.
Yep.
Sick play. Sick.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message, of course, brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters at 98.7 ESPN New York. Now, today on ESPN Daily, it's the latest in our series called Essentials, sports stories you have to hear. In the early days of the Green Bay Packers, a mysterious fire broke out and may have actually saved the team, but was it set on purpose? That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. So we've talked a lot of Giants, a lot of Gettleman, a lot of where they go at four, but Rick, I feel like your Jets have been underserved lately for us here on the station, but that will not happen in the next 12 to 15 to 17 minutes.
Yeah, disrespectful. And I understand it.
I think it's actually a sign of respect. I think it's more that the Jets are probably more functional right now than the Giants are.
Currently more functional, I would say, yeah. I mean, what Joe Douglas has been able to do, and there is some, I mean, I would imagine some trepidation from you and Dave Gettleman, especially under the circumstances. And then on top of it, I mean, you just hired Joe Judge and you find out that Dave Gettleman is potentially on the hot seat.
Exactly. All right, so let's bring him in, the wonderful and talented Jets reporter for ESPN.com and 98.7. That is, of course, Rich Cimini. Rich, we hope you're doing as well as you can be in these very difficult circumstances.
And the same right back to you guys as well. I'm hunkered down here in the Long Island office covering the Jets these days. But, yeah, so how often do we say that the Jets actually look more functional than the Giants? That usually doesn't happen too often, does it?
No, not too often. But it feels like that's the case right now. And there's a lot of different areas to go with. And let me start with free agency, because I don't think we've really spoken to you since it's played out. Offensive line, he was very aggressive. No, I can't even say aggressive. He did a lot there, brought in a lot of bodies. Do you like what Douglas did in free agency, Rich?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, they didn't make the huge splash. I think there was a lot of speculation about Jack Conklin and Joe Thuney, and the Jets end up with, you know, more like second-tier offensive linemen, but they didn't spend outrageous amounts of money. The one guy where they splurged a little bit was Connor McGovern, so he'll probably be the starting center, you know, $18 million guaranteed. So that's nothing to sneeze at. That's a pretty good-sized contract. And the other guys are versatile-type guys. You know, George Fant can play left or right tackle. Right now he's penciled in at left tackle. And Greg Van Roten, who's a Long Island kid who's always dreamt of playing for the Jets, I'd say probably right now at right guard. You know, they made strides on the offensive line, but I wouldn't say this is a finished product by any means at this point.
Yeah, but, I mean, Rich, I mean, unlike the last couple of years, and I get it, you know, Mike's trying to save his job and had some, you know, splash free agent signings. We all realize that that's not necessarily the right way to build your team. It just seems like Joe Douglas has attacked this with a clear plan, and he had a certain amount of money that he wanted to spend on each player. I mean, Robbie Anderson being a good example of that, and he stuck to that, which I really like. As far as Robbie Anderson is concerned, to your knowledge, did the Jets make a pretty legitimate offer to Robbie Anderson and he decided not to take it?
I don't know what the exact offer was. I know they valued him at about a $10 million a year player. That's the number they were looking at. You saw some reports of a four-year, $40 million contract offer from the Jets, which obviously he turned down to go for 2 years, 20 in Carolina. The four-year 40 doesn't include, you know, what's the guarantee? I mean, there could have been very little guaranteed money in that. With Carolina, he gets $12 million guaranteed. So Robbie, if he doesn't have a good year, he'll be on the market again next year because they'll cut him. And he'll end up with a one-year, $12 million contract. So the Jets didn't want to extend to that $12 million mark in the first year. And like you said, Rick, Joe has a very specific plan that he's following. He's got money points, you know, that he doesn't want to go over on these players, and he's sticking to it. It's very disciplined. I think it's a good approach. He also is doing that for two reasons. One, they didn't go into this free agency with a ton of money. Last year, you guys recall, it was like over $100 million in cap room. This year was about $50 million, so he's had to be a little bit more thrifty in terms of that. And also, most of these guys, I think the number is like 11 out of 14 of their signings are on one-year contracts, which is basically auditions, of course, but it also gives them a lot of long-term flexibility as well. So definitely a plan. Robbie Anderson didn't fit the plan in terms of money, and now they're going to have to find a wide receiver in the draft.
Ritz, I'm reading ESPN.com and looking at this beautiful article that you wrote on Tristan Wirfs, the right tackle out of Iowa. Obviously, offensive line is going to be an area that the Jets look to address during the draft. Couple of questions. Is Tristan Wirfs the best offensive lineman out of the bunch? And secondly, is that the direction that the Jets are leaning with their 11th overall pick?
Yeah, I think Tristan is a top 10 player. I think he could go anywhere from 4 to 10. And is he the best? You know, this is a weird offensive line class because I think if you talk to 4 different GMs, you might get 4 different opinions. There's no clear cut favorite. I think Tristan is probably the one or two. You know, Mekhi Becton from Louisville is very highly regarded. Jedrick Wills from Alabama. Those three are probably the best three, and you get a different order from depending on who you talk to. So I don't think Tristan will be there for the Jets. I think he'd be a really good pick for them because he can play right tackle. He can probably play left tackle as well. Some people think he's a better guard projecting into the NFL. So I think he'd be a really good pick for the Jets at 11. I just don't think he'll be there. I do think, Chris, that offensive line remains a priority for them. They still need some long-term answers at tackle. George Fant and Chuma Adoga are not going to get it done for you long-term. So I do think it's a possibility at 11.
Rich Simini, sorry, with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Iowa, Rich, has a long storied history and tradition of developing or producing wonderful offensive linemen at the next level. Does that impact, do you think, guys in the NFL, they look at the Iowa contingents and say it's a factory of producing solid offensive linemen, and that helps a guy like Tristan Wirfs?
I think it does, because you know the guys are going to be well-schooled. Kirk Ferentz, who's been the coach there since 1999, has produced 17 NFL draft picks on the offensive line. And you guys have heard of, Marshall Yanda, who just retired from Baltimore.
Well, teammate, yeah.
Pro Bowls. Yeah, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer someday. And Brandon Scherff from Washington, another guy. And so Tristan's a little different from those guys, because those guys came in, and Brian Balaga, another one. Those guys came in as like 2 or 3-star recruits, like most of Iowa kids do, and they worked there, you know, they developed themselves into NFL players. Tristan came in as a very highly recruited guy, just a freakish type athlete. So, and he was really well schooled by an offensive line minded coach in Ferentz. So I think it definitely helps his NFL draft stock.
The great Rich Simini joins us here on the show. Rich, let me run something by you. Tell me if you like it, love it, or you hate it. I agree with you. I think offensive line still needs to be the priority. So tell me if you like this. You take an offensive lineman with the 11th overall pick. You address the wide receiver because of the depth at that position, especially with what you saw last year. I mean, in the second round, some of the wide receivers, Debo Samuel, the impact that they had in those second rounds, and this is supposed to be even a deeper draft at that position. And then here's the piece de resistance. Taking a page out of the Indianapolis Colts playbook, you trade next year's first round pick for Yannick Ngakoue.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, he's a great edge rusher. He's only 25 or 26 years old. The Jets, they did make an inquiry on Ngakoue. I know that. I don't think they followed up, and I don't think there's any thought among the Ngakoue camp or the Jaguars camp that the Jets are going to be serious players in this. Because you're talking about a contract in excess of, probably around $20 million a year. And I don't think the Jets want to do something like that. And I don't think Jacksonville would take a future number one where they want a current number one. So, that's the
yeah, one. But Rich, wouldn't, I mean, but if you're Jacksonville, wouldn't you want to gear up? I mean, you're going to have, I mean, you could have Trevor Lawrence and you could have, I mean, you're going to have Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields next year at the quarterback position. I mean, that gives you the flexibility to go up and get a quarterback next year if you want one.
Yeah, but if there's a team offering you, pick a team in the middle of the first round. Say there's a team like around 20 or something. Like, say Seattle is offering you their first pick this year. I mean, you take the bird in the hand, So
oh,
that's
yeah.
The one disadvantage for the Jets this year, because they're not going to give the 11th pick in the draft
no.
for Ngakoue. So they'd have to get creative and offer maybe this year's two and next year's two, or like you said, a two this year and next year's one, like that. So I don't think they'd be competitive with other teams who have better ammunition this year. And like I said, I also think the Jets wouldn't want to commit, you know, 50, 60 million guaranteed to that kind of player. That's, I just don't think it's fitting in the Joe Douglas model right now.
Rich, and continuing to focus on the offensive line position group, is there any interest from the Jets in Trent Williams, the tackle from the Washington Redskins?
You know, that's a really interesting one, Chris, because the short answer is no, they don't. And they signed George Fant to be their left tackle. You know, it's a 3-year, $27 million. It's basically a 1-year, $9 million deal, so they can get out after a year easily with minimal cap implications. Like we talked about earlier, there's probably a pretty good chance they're going to draft a tackle, if not in the first round, and maybe the second round. And so Williams, no, I do not see that. The only scenario, A, you're going to have to compensate the Redskins, probably with a second-round pick. And B, the player is looking for, you know, probably $14-15 million a year, and he's 31. He's had hasn't played in a year, and so that's another strike against it. However, say that they don't draft a tackle on the first day of the draft, and they're going into day two, and they still have some concern about the tackle position. Then maybe they pick up the phone to Washington and say, "Hey, what are you looking for? You know, we're interested in this guy." So I don't see it right now. You know, I was told that there's no immediate interest in Trent Williams, but perhaps, and I still think it's a long shot, maybe that changes during the draft.
Rich Cimini with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I don't imagine this happens, Rich, but I guess you never know. Jadeveon Clowney still out there and available. Is there any chance you think the Jets make a call and kick the tires on Clowney?
There's a chance there. That's more likely in terms of than Ngakoue or Trent Williams. There have been some speculation out of Seattle that the Jets have made an offer to confirm that. So what you're seeing there is obviously a player who's been, you know, got a couple of things, not a great year last year in terms of sack production, which a lot of teams look at, and also he dealt with a core muscle injury. And teams can't give these guys physicals now because of the, you know, the restrictions, the COVID-19 restrictions. So that's really working against Clowney. I think from what I hear, he wants to go back to Seattle. He may end up taking a 1-year deal to go back to Seattle. But if I'm the Jets, sure, you know, I think you got to pick up the phone and investigate it, maybe make a 1-year prove it offer. You know, I don't know what that would be. I don't think he'd go to the Jets, you know, because of the scheme they play. I think he'd rather be a down lineman in a 4-3 like Seattle uses. But, you know, if you're the Jets, why not, you know, make a call and just investigate?
Rich Meaney joins us on the show. Last one for me, Rich. You know, you mentioned Joe Douglas sticking to a clear-cut plan, giving himself, you know, with these 1-year deals, some flexibility for next year. Any chance if Trent Williams, obviously because of the draft compensation, isn't an option? Because of the relationship, Joe Douglas, is Jason Peters maybe potentially an option for a 1-year deal?
Well, that's, I think, more likely just because he is a free agent, so there wouldn't be any team compensation. It would just be paying the player. But, you know, I think they like what they have at tackle. I mean, I'm not the biggest Adoga fan, but I know the coaching staff thinks he has some good upside and he's very athletic as a pass protector. And that's what Adam Gase is looking for in his scheme. It's a zone scheme. You really want athletic guys up there. So I think they like Adoga. They obviously like George Fant because they just signed him. So I think Jet fans, I've read on my timeline, you know, Peters and Trent Williams, I don't think they're thinking in that direction. I think the next move they make at tackle will be in the draft, you know, whether it's a Mekhi Becton or whether they wait to the second round to get it. I think that would be the next significant move at tackle, is getting a 21-year-old who doesn't make a lot of money and come in and develop him rather than reaching for a Jason Peters type guy who I think is 30, if I'm not mistaken.
Rich, we've talked about it before, the pressure on Adam Gase going into year two. With the NFL owners approving a new playoff format and expanding to 14 teams, does that put even more pressure on Adam Gase to make a push and get into the postseason?
Definitely. That and the fact that Tom Brady's gone. So he's out of the division. I think, you know, you have to look at, if you're the, one of the three teams that have been chasing the Patriots for what seems like 100 years, you absolutely have to put more pressure on yourself, and there's also more external pressure on those teams as well. So, for sure, you know, second year of the program, player, you know, they kept their coaching staff intact, so it's not new systems. They have that continuity. You know, they have a quarterback who's got promise, who's been with the coach for a year now. You have a team that finished strongly last year, winning, what was it, six out of their last eight or something like that?
Six out of their last eight.
So you got that momentum. So, yeah, I mean, there is pressure on Adam Gase to get in the playoffs this year. It's been 9 years for the Jets. I know he's only responsible for one of those. But, yeah, for sure, for all those reasons.
All right, Rich. Well, listen, we appreciate a couple minutes. Rick, you're done, right? You said it was your last question, but I never know if that's accurate. You're done?
No, I'm done. No, okay. I'm gonna have some self-restraint. We'll have Rich on next week. I'm going to have some self-restraint.
Yep.
Keep a couple in the chamber.
3 weeks away from the draft tomorrow. It's amazing that it's so soon, but here we are, huh?
It's flying by. You know, we'll be talking to Joe Douglas a little later today. The writers will be talking to him, so it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say, you know, just updating us on free agency and how they're dealing with the, highly unusual circumstances. So that'll be interesting as well.
All right. Well, Rich, we really appreciate it as always, and we'll talk to you soon, and stay safe and best to your family.
Thanks. Same to you guys.
All right. Good stuff. That, of course, is the gentleman that is Rich Cimini. He honestly is one of my favorite people in all of sports media. He's just a nice guy.
No, Dave, he's dialed into the Jets, and he has a knack for being able to search out the things that the organization is trying to do, the overall philosophy, direction of where the team is going. And the one thing that I'm really interested to see from that conversation that he has with Joe Douglas later today is how Joe Douglas plans on running the draft. Keep in mind, this is going to be his first draft as the guy. And the NFL is limiting the amount of people that are going to be allowed in the room to 10 people. So I'm really interested to see how Joe Douglas plans to navigate that for his first time around.
Now, it's interesting that Rich also said, Rick, that he doesn't expect Tristan Wirfs to be there at 11. I don't think there's any chance that Tristan Wirfs is going to be available to the Jets at 11. Do you?
No, I don't think so. I mean, after the combine, I mean, the fact that he's, you know, he's an offensive lineman out of Iowa. I mean, if you do yourself a favor, I mean, if you're a Jets fan, if you're an NFL fan in general, I mean, read Rich's article on Tristan Wirfs. I mean, if you have questions about, you know, what your kid should be doing, should he be playing strictly one sport, read this article. I mean, this kid, I mean, he's, I'm reading this thing. I mean, some of the things this kid was able to do, I mean, between riding his bike at 3 and then winning the discus, I mean, the kid was he's an unbelievable athlete.
He's a freakish athlete.
He's a freak athlete. He really is, which I love.
I love the fact that he was a state champion wrestler, class 2A. I mean, when you start talking about trench play in the NFL, offensive and defensive line, guys that understand how to use leverage, they end up winning more than they lose. So that's a tremendous advantage to be able to have an offensive lineman with that type of background.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like him for the Giants, I think, at 4 overall. And then McShay has Isaiah Simmons going to the Giants at 4, which, again, I like him. He's an athletic freak of a defensive player, but I think you need to protect your commodity in Daniel Jones. That's kind of my thought on this whole thing.
I think both local teams need to go offensive line and protect their young quarterbacks, but like Rich said, there's no consensus on who the best offensive tackle in this class is. I mean, you talk to one scout, it could be worse. Another scout thinks Becton. I think, you know, Thomas is probably the last one in that top group. But, I mean, I just look at those guys, Becton, Wirfs, Jedrick Wills from Alabama. I mean, those guys look like they're plug-and-play offensive tackles, a guy that you can pencil in for the next decade to be a starter as one of your tackles. There's a tremendous amount of value for a team, but I think the local teams in particular, just because you have young quarterbacks.
Yeah, the only thing that concerns me a little bit, because I think offensive line is where the Jets need to go as well, is that McShay, and I like Jerry Jeudy, and they clearly need a wide receiver, but I think you can find a really good wide receiver in the second round, is that, I mean, I don't know if McShay would do this, but you would imagine when you put out a mock draft, you want to be right on most of the things that you predict. I mean, McShay does have a really close relationship with Joe Douglas. So, is that something that he's heard, that they would go wide receiver with the 11th pick?
Could be. I mean, listen, Jerry Jeudy is going to be a stud wide receiver. The question is that more important than protecting the blind side of your quarterback? And for my money, I'd say you got to shore up the offensive line before you start, you know, supplying some of the weapons.
Here's how I would look at it, Dave. I mean, if the top two tackles on your board are gone by the time you pick the 11.
Which they will be.
To me, it makes it a no-brainer that you go Judy, and then you try to figure out your offensive tackle situation in free agency or via trade.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. I don't care how old Jason Peters is. I mean, you could use – I mean, there's – I think there's something to be said about the amount of leadership he would bring to that offense. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think Sam's the most vocal guy. I don't know. Someone like him, I think, would be a good fit for 1 year.
I like Jason Peters, but I love Trent Williams, especially if you're talking about only having to give up a second-round pick for him.
But then you got to pay him, too.
Yeah, I understand you got to pay him, Dave, but they got cap space. Who are the Jets paying? Who are they paying? They're paying C.J. Mosley. They're going to have to pay eventually Jamal Adams, but who are they paying big money? When you have a quarterback on a rookie contract.
No, not a lot.
It just makes sense to go ahead and do that deal because you're talking about getting 4 or 5 good years out of Trent Williams, who I think is only 31 years old?
Yeah.
Here's what I would do.
Who hasn't played football also.
Here's what I would do. Are you ready for this? Mm-hmm. Here's what I would do. I like Chris's idea. The one thing that would concern me a little bit, if you do want to address tackle in this draft, I think the drop-off from the top 3 or 4 tackles is greater than the drop-off between whoever you think the best wide receiver is and whoever you get in the second round. Would you guys agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. So here's what I would do. I would sit at 11 and hopefully get an offensive lineman. If I can't do that and I end up with Jerry Jeudy, I've addressed wide receiver. Then what I do is second round, I pick up the phone, I call. If they say, hey, you know, we're not willing to do it, that takes Trent Williams out of it. I pick up the phone now and I call Jason Peters. I try to sign him to a 1-year deal. And I'm telling you, Jacksonville is going to want to have flexibility in next year's draft to try to get one of those quarterbacks. You'd think. I would try to trade for Yannick Ngakoue. You saw what Indianapolis just gave up for DeForest Buckner.
Yep. What, 13
Yannick
overall,
Ngakoue,
right?
He's 25 years old, Ngakoue.
So you would give up next year's one for Ngakoue?
Yeah, because you got to imagine. I mean, this should be a playoff team. So you had the Colts give up a 13th overall pick. I'd like to believe, maybe it's just, I mean, I'm just being overly optimistic that, you know, it's going to be, you know, somewhere in the middle to later in the first round. If you get Yannick Ngakoue, there's no edge pass rushers really in this draft outside of Epenesa and Chase Young, right?
There's certainly nothing
need
at
edge pass
at the
rush.
Level of Ngakoue, that's for sure.
I don't know. I think I would, I mean, their defense is close. Especially with getting Mosley back and Avery Williamson back, if you can get someone that has that kind of impact rushing the quarterback, I mean, how much is that? Doesn't that make Quinton Williams better too? Doesn't that make your secondary
better? Of course, he's a dominant edge rusher.
I would try to do that, but that's just me. If the choice is him or take a flyer on Jadeveon Clowney, I would much prefer Yannick Ngakoue.
Well, he's a better player. There's no doubt about that.
If you get Clowney, you're spending money.
If you get Ngakoue, you're spending big commodity.
Are you spending money or are you? Here's the problem, though, Dave. Are you spending money or are you burning money? There's a difference.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not arguing with you that Ngakoue is way better a player than Clowney. But if I get Clowney, I'm spending, burning, whatever money. If I get Ngakoue, I'm mortgaging my future a little bit.
No, you're not. I mean, the future is now. Your quarterback's in his third year. I mean, at some point, you have to pay him. When are you going to have this kind of flexibility?
So you expect expect the Jets to compete for a playoff spot this year, right?
I think if they made the right moves, yeah. I mean, if you draft right, I mean, yeah, I think you could be. You should be.
Yeah, I think they need to be. I agree with you.
I mean, the division, I mean, with no Tom Brady, and I guess the Patriots, they love Jarrett Stidham. I mean, the fact that they traded away Hoyer and kept Stidham on as their backup would obviously lead you to believe that they do like him. I mean, I would probably take a flyer on Cam Newton if I was them, but that's just me. I think Buffalo's ahead of you, and Miami scares me a little bit. They absolutely scare me a little bit.
Yeah. Their everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or your sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN. Typically, my sports life or my life revolves around sports, right? So it's March Madness into the start of baseball, into, you know, the draft and all these things. Now I'm like looking forward to different TV shows that are coming up. It's amazing the way my mind works, Rick. April 13th is the debut of that, that new Bachelor series on ABC.
Yeah, you'll love it.
You think so?
I don't know. I haven't, I'm
what
a little
like,
bit
like a it's not the normal Bachelor
show.
It's not
the normal, no.
It's like a musical Bachelor or something.
Yeah, it's a spinoff. I mean, I'm all in for the Bachelor, so I'm sure I'm going to enjoy it. But to have your first, and this is not your first, but I mean, you're
no,
coming back
I used
into
to watch
it.
The show.
No, I know. I don't want you to be disappointed. I don't want to hype you up, and then you watch it, and it's not like what you're used to, and you get a little bit disappointed.
Well, I'm gonna watch it.
Oh, I know you're gonna watch it.
I think it's only 6 episodes, so it's not like I'm investing hundreds of hours into this thing starting on April 13th.
But you still got, I mean, you still got the Tiger King you gotta watch.
I gotta, watch Ozark season 3.
You gotta watch that.
I got Narcos I have to watch.
Curb Your Enthusiasm you have to catch up.
Curb, I haven't seen any of the season.
But yeah, you got plenty of stuff to watch.
Oh,
man. You got plenty of stuff to get to.
And then April 19th. I can't wait for April 19th for that to start.
April 19th.
You talked about it yesterday, Dave.
The Jordan documentary, Dave.
Oh, the Jordan. Listen, I got a lot going on.
All right, I'm going to add to your list of things going on. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
I got me and Santi been working on this. So remember last week we played the game where I gave you three different, we did it with the free agency?
Yes.
You love it, you lust it, or you hate it?
Yes, yes.
I got Sounders for it now. You ready for this?
Oh, yeah.
All right, here we go, Santi. So you're going to either, you're going to want to marry it.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them. I love this team.
You're going to want to sexy time it.
Bang! Bang!
Or you hate it and you're going to want to kill it.
I was making an art. Face dead. The great thing about that soundbite from Don is he was so angry.
No, he was serious. Yeah.
Like he at that very moment, he would have punched Peter right in the face.
If they were in the same, yeah, he would have punched him right square
right
in the face.
Yeah, Dave.
I don't know if there's any other way to interpret. I'm gonna smack your face dead.
Well, no, but
pretty
it's
pretty
like,
sure he was angry at him. Yeah,
like
I don't know
off
how that
color
would be.
Or just like I'm joking with you. Like if he was standing next to him, I firmly believe that Don would have punched him right in the face.
I don't know, Dave. Can you say that in a joking manner? I'll smack your face dead. I don't know.
I mean,
no, the way he said it.
Smack your face dead. I don't know.
Never mind the fact that you can hear the microphone violently shaking at the end of it.
I was making an art. Face dead.
It's so good.
Speaking of which, I thought Kay was gonna have one of those moments with Rosenberg yesterday. Kay show.
What happened? I didn't see it.
Got a little spicy in the 4 o'clock hour. Just saying.
Whose side did you take? Were you on?
Well, you know, I'm always rolling with the Kayster.
Even
saying.
If Michael's so it's just a blind love that even if Michael's wrong in an argument, you would take his side over.
Yeah, you know, I typically lean toward Michael in most arguments, conversations, etc. Now, I will say this: Rosenberg did try to interject a little levity to the show, which he always does. That's his role. But Michael got a little irritated.
I like it.
I got to be honest, and this may be just me. I don't know if you guys feel the same way. I mean, when we're finally in. Who knows when it's going to be, but when we're past this and we're back to some semblance of normalcy, I actually like having everyone on that show in a separate, like in their own
environment.
I love it because you never know what's going to happen. Like you can change what's in front of you. You'll have time. Like there'll be segments where Peter's just gone and then he shows back up.
I was telling someone the other day, I love the fact that you said that there was a segment where he was gone and he comes back and they're like, where were you? He's like, I was walking my dog. I mean, it's so great.
I love it. It's like unexpected. Like, I mean, listen, I'm just telling you right now, and I was thinking about this last night. If we were on TV the way they were and I was in my office, you were in your office and Canty was in his office, like I could only imagine, like there'd be segments where I would just show up. I would be dressed like, in one segment, I'd be dressed as the Tiger King. In the other segment, I would come back. I'd be dressed as one of the Tiger King's husbands with like the tattoos and everything else. You could do so many funny things that I can't do in the office.
Would you have a Carol Lewis blow up doll like the Tiger King did?
I could find Carol Baskin. I could find one of those. I mean, I could have fake tattoos drawn on me. I could do all sorts of funny things.
So
Limitless.
You played the Sounders for you love it, you love
it. I got them.
You hate it. Are we doing that, or is that just?
Yes,
the one
I have them. I have them right now.
Okay, I didn't know. I didn't know whether you wanted.
Well,
me
we have
to
no other time
the
to
Sounders.
Do it.
Okay.
No, I
well,
want to get
go.
You guys geared up. I want you excited. Right. I want you to realize that Ray Santiago is locked in, dialed in top of his game coming up with Sounders. All right, here we go. This is for you two.
Yes, yes.
Okay, ready. This is for you two. Remember, you like it, you want to marry it.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them. I love this team.
Sexy time.
Bang!
And this one you just hate.
I was making an art. Face dead.
All right, here we go.
Yes.
First topic for our game is landing spots for Cam Newton. You guys ready?
Cam, yeah.
Cam Newton. I got the Chargers. I got Miami. And I got New England.
All right. Chargers, Miami, New England. All right. I'll go for it. Now, there's no order that we're going in, right? You don't have to go, I love it, I want to marry it, and I detest it. You can just go wherever you'd like?
Wherever you like.
Okay. I'd like to go to the Don Sounder, and I would like to incorporate that with Miami. Yeah, that's right. Because I think that Cam Newton, when healthy, is probably still very good. And I think Cam Newton, when healthy on Miami, probably doesn't make them a great football team. But Cam Newton on New England is scary. And Cam Newton on the Chargers, who I think are probably a good quarterback away from being an excellent team, is scary as well. So the one that doesn't really fit, the one that I like to play, the Don, and let's play it again because it's so entertaining, would be Miami for me, is the one I do not like.
I think Dave just let us know he's a hater by nature by starting with the hate aspect first and then working backwards. I'm more of a lover, so I'm going to start with the marry, and I'm going to marry Cam Newton with the L.A. Chargers.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them. I love this team.
Absolutely right. There's something special about Cam Newton. It feels like he belongs in L.A. and with a team that's ready to win now and a team that, you know, might not necessarily have the quarterback of their choosing in this upcoming draft. It just feels like Cam Newton would be a solid bridge until they can figure out what their quarterback situation is going to be. I think Cam Newton with Bill Belichick would be sexy because I could only imagine the ways that Belichick would use Cam Newton in that offense. So I think that would be pretty special. And then I'm in agreement with Dave about Cam to Miami. I hate it. They pushed the reset button last year. New GM, new head coach. And then they're going into year two of that tenure. I think they're trying to find their franchise quarterback. Cam Newton is not the guy.
I was making an argument.
Dead.
How come the one that I say about loving the Giants, it sounds like I have an accent?
Because well, there's so much passion.
Yeah, but it sounds like I'm from Europe. Santiago,
well, that's what it's more romantic.
It's not altered. It's you.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them. I love this team.
If it's socially acceptable, I'd marry them. I sound like something's wrong.
I like it.
It sounds language like, it sounds of love, like I'm drinking tea with my pinky out, though.
Maybe you are.
Play one more time.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them. I love this team.
If it's socially acceptable. I mean, you never told me that. I sound like something's wrong. You all the time. I'll be honest with you. You guys have never told me that I sound like I'm European.
Well, like Stewie
Griffin?
You don't
usually. I mean, you don't usually. I mean, that was a little bit
in that moment.
If it's socially just in that moment. You just have so much passion.
You lost yourself for a second. It's okay.
That's why we're using it.
Socially acceptable. What's the matter with me?
Had a little Dr. Evil in it.
It's bizarre is what it is. All right. I'm going to go with my socially acceptable marriage to New England because I think the best of Cam Newton coupled with that defense, coupled with Bill Belichick, gives the potential to be an excellent team. So if it was socially acceptable, that would be the one that I would marry.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them. I love this team.
And that leaves the Chargers for the Mike Breen version of the Bang Bang.
Bang! Bang!
Yeah. So I would go marry would be New England.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them. I love this team.
Marry them. The affair would be with the Chargers and the I do not like it all is with the Miami Dolphins.
I was making an
face dead.
I would love to have that Breen sounder in my bedroom.
Put it on a loop.
Yeah, just I would love it. Wife would walk in like, here we go again. This next one's gonna be more difficult, just so you guys know. This is the Jameis Winston landing spots. You ready for these?
Yeah.
Ready.
I got Pittsburgh. I mean, he's pretty much the black version of Roethlisberger, let's be honest. New Orleans. Green Bay.
Right, Chris, you take the lead with this one.
I'm going to marry him with Pittsburgh.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them. I love this team.
I just think that that's the ideal landing spot, having an opportunity to learn behind Ben Roethlisberger for a couple of years, but more importantly, to have the stability that the Steelers organization offers. I mean, you're talking about three head coaches in the last half century, and Kevin Colbert is in lockstep with Mike Tomlin. So I feel like that would be the ideal situation for Jameis long term. So I'm going to marry him to that team.
Why do you sound so disappointed?
Because I knew he was going to go with Pittsburgh.
Because this is trying to sneak smart in a answer. Wrinkle.
I know it's a smart answer. I tried to sneak in a little bit of a wrinkle. I thought I could get him to bite on it, but he didn't.
You think that we're going to fall for the old hidden ball trick? Come on.
No, this is not Henry Rowan Gardner. I don't think you're going to fall for that, but I just thought that maybe I could tease you with a little bit in New Orleans a little bit. Just tease you just a bit with New Orleans.
No, you can't. I'm also going to marry, like a beautiful five-star affair. I mean, talking about rose petals and a ceremony and the whole thing. I'm gonna marry Pittsburgh and Roethlisberger.
If it was socially acceptable, so I would marry them. I love this team.
How is it predictable? It's the prudent, smart answer.
I know it is. I know it is. I don't disagree with you. I just thought I could get you to bite. All right, what are you, Canty? What are you going to? So you're marrying Pittsburgh. What are you gonna have a spicy affair with?
I like Jameis having the affair with Sean Payton down in New Orleans. Nice. If anybody can get the most out of his abilities, it would be Payton. And I think Jameis needs to be with somebody that's an established head coach, somebody that's been around for a while, somebody that's innovative. I like Sean Payton for all of those reasons. I like Jameis Winston working with Sean Payton. Try to see if he can get up to live up to his first overall pick status.
Don't they need a backup quarterback? New Orleans?
Yeah, Taysom Hill.
They have Taysom Hill.
Yeah, but I mean, Sean Payton was on yesterday and he was saying how much, you know, how they're going to use Taysom Hill. You can't use Taysom Hill on special teams in the backfield if he's going to be a backup quarterback every game, can you?
You can't send him out to block punts and then say, all right, you're our quarterback.
Did you see what Sean Payton did accidentally yesterday? Did you hear that?
What did he do?
Well, he accidentally, I don't know if he did it on accident, but he insinuated this is going to be Drew Brees' last year.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
He said Drew Brees. He goes, we have a unique situation where Drew Brees signed up for his final year. He's retiring him.
I don't think that comes as much as a surprise to anybody, though, right?
No, but that's why I thought that Jameis Winston in New Orleans kind of would be an interesting fit.
Yeah, it's an illicit affair, like a steamy hot, like a Jacqueline Collins novel kind of thing. have I gone too far?
A little bit.
That would be my illicit affair as well, because I think that Sean Payton, and you know what else I like? I like the indoor facility. I like a lot of dome games because, to me, multiple reasons. Firstly, Aaron Rodgers, I don't want any quarterback trying to make his mark in the NFL working behind Aaron Rodgers. I think he has the potential to be very difficult, so I don't like that. And then Green Bay is a miserable, just weather-wise, place to play, so I agree. Chris and I are lockstep on this one. I go Pittsburgh is the beautiful five-star wedding. New Orleans is the hot, steamy affair. And Green Bay is the one I have no interest in.
I was making an argument. Face dead.
Yeah, I figured you guys would do that. I figured you guys would both go Pittsburgh, but I tried.
Okay.
I like the answers. I think were good answers.
I think our analysis and logic is, I mean, out of this world, to be honest.
No, it's spot on. The only reason that I would maybe potentially shy away from Pittsburgh is I would rather, if I was Jameis Winston, I mean, my first choice would be I would play for Bill Belichick for free. Like, whatever, like, give me minimum. I'll try to win the starting job. But Jameis Winston with the whole eating the W's and everything else, like, clearly he wants to be a leader. And what better quarterback to learn from how to be a leader of your team than would be Drew Brees? That's why I like that fit.
So you would go with that? That'd be the one you'd marry?
Well, I don't think Ben's a great leader. I mean, they've kind of had both. They both of them kind of had the same kind of problems, haven't they?
Yeah, but the Steelers have had a lot of success with Ben Roethlisberger as their quarterback. They won two Super Bowls together.
No, I know. I just think, I mean, if Ben's elbow is right, he doesn't, I mean, he's a bit of a drama queen, but he doesn't usually get hurt. the fact that Sean Payton said that Drew Brees only has a year left, I don't know. Maybe have the opportunity to stay down there, maybe?
Well, here's the thing, Rick. We don't know where Roethlisberger is going to be at. I know you said if, yeah. but, I mean, how often do we see quarterbacks at this advanced age coming off of this type of injury have success?
Not normally. You don't.
Yeah. So.
I guess I mean, if it was me and I was Cam Newton and I was Jameis Winston, what it come down to me is I would probably look for the teams that's quarterbacks are most likely to be hurt, like that have a long history of having injuries during the season.
I guess, because
If I could sign in Philadelphia, if that was an option, I would consider it.
I actually like that a lot.
Winston, you know what I mean?
Winston has a backup in Philly?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't want any part of that because he's talented. And God forbid he actually puts it all together. See, if I was a Bucs fan, like your father-in-law, the only reason I wouldn't be terrified right now is because I got Brady. But I'd be nervous that this guy goes somewhere else and can figure it out somehow.
Yeah, but they've had 5 years. I mean, I would agree with you, but he's frustrated them to a point where it's like they've just seen enough.
I think I would feel the way you feel, Dave. I would feel the way you feel if I was a Saints fan. Because I don't know how much Drew Brees has left in the tank, and you just let the guy that was going to be your heir apparent walk out of the door in free agency in Teddy Bridgewater, a guy you saw start and win 5 games for you during the regular season.
Yep.
That would bother me.
All right, everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Here's what you do. You wash your hands. You avoid close contact with people who are sick. You avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or your sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. By the way, we did not discuss it highly enough yesterday. The man dressed as a shrub running through the streets of England. I'm not kidding. It's one of the great pieces of video in the history of anybody doing anything. The guy, he acts like he's almost in war as a shrub, like diving around.
The barrel roll was classic, Dave. The barrel roll was classic.
But you agree with me, Chris, right? Like it was underplayed. As much as we discussed yesterday, it was still underplayed with how amazing it was.
Yeah, it's a little bit surprising because Rico brought this story to our attention and he really didn't do it justice, Dave.
Like it's hard to do justice to that. Like you can't even see a shred of anything with him. It's all shrubbery. And then he's diving down and he's doing rolls and for what I still don't understand is why. Like, what is his massive point here, Rick? He's out, he's diving, he's rolling, he's jumping into other bushes. What's the ultimate goal?
Well, I think to be funny, it's almost like he's mocking the mandate to stay in your house. Like, they're locked down, they're not supposed to be out of their houses, and he decided that I'm not going to just sneak around as a shrub. I'm going to barrel roll and everything else. I'm going to be a shrub ninja.
Think about the effort that he put in to make that costume, though. You're talking about a ghillie suit that looks like a shrub.
I mean, he really, like, he looks like a shrub. Now, here's what his next trick should be. When social distance and all that is out the window, sit there on the side of the road next to the other shrubs, and when people walk by, just pop out.
That's not good, but why? To scare people?
Because
that's terrible.
People.
Give someone a heart attack.
How good would it be? People would fall over.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I mean, you'd probably get punched in the face at some point.
But maybe he's a large shrub. I don't know. I mean, he could be a huge guy.
Regardless if you're a huge guy or not, like if you scare the wrong person and the person's natural instinct isn't to back up and be like his natural instinct is to like just attack.
They're more fight than flight.
Exactly,
that could be a problem.
That's
if
what scares
you put
me.
That on a, if you put that on a loop of just that guy going next to other shrubbery, and when people walked by, popping out and scaring them, I would watch it forever.
Well, of course you would. But they do that on ESPN, right? You see it all the time where they'll be inside like the Alabama or whatever locker room it is, and they have one of the guys dressed up as the football player because they have the uniform. You know what I mean? And then he jumps out and scares his teammates. What if, God forbid, one of your teammates, it's a fight guy. He's not a flight guy. And he just decides to just sock you right in the face.
I think it's going in badly for you. I think that's what ends up happening.
I ain't dressing up no shrub.
You're probably right, but it would still be very interesting.
DiPietro, Kathy, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.